This week on Potlatch, Navajo Tribal Council Chairman Peter McDonald, Tundra Times publisher Tom Richards Jr., and Alaska Senator Mike Gravel at the Tundra Times banquet in Anchorage. The chairman of the Navajo Tribal Council, Peter McDonald, spoke to the Tundra Times banquet in Anchorage November 12th. McDonald said that, like Alaska organizations, his tribe is also searching for self-determination and attempting to preserve its identity.
Coming up here, I continue to think of the word subsistence. It's used a great deal up here, I'm sure, and I'm sure you're very familiar with that. In my native language and in English, that word had very little meaning until I found your definition. I think your definition goes something like this: customary and regular uses made of renewable resources for food, shelter, fuel, clothing, tools, transportation, and for the production and selling of traditional articles of handicraft and clothing. Then came my understanding of the word subsistence. And I know what you mean by that. You mean that subsistence goes much more than just the caribous and the berries and the traditional method of existing. It means your culture, the spiritual well-being that you are at ease with, and also the need for an economic program between the villages and the corporations. So I think that we have something in common there, and I want to say that your theme, which addresses itself to that question, is very appropriate. Does one way of life have to die so that another may live? I think that's the theme of this convention. If you are referring to the village way of life or the urban way of life or profit corporations you're talking about, my answer has to be, if one way must die, your way or my way, or the village way, then the other way, the urban industrial way, will survive only long enough to attend our funeral. So therefore, both must survive if either is to survive. But both will surely undergo change. The world of industry and technology, learning from us, from your people and mine, how to achieve a greater harmony with nature. Our own peoples, the natives of this continent, learning how to anticipate change and cope with change by acquiring the expertise and even the technology we need if we are to protect that which is most fundamental and that which is most precious to us.
Peter McDonald, referring to the theme of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, "Does One Way Have to Die So That Another May Live?" We'll hear more from the Navajo tribal chairman after this song from Joan Baez.
Down from the train, and there to meet me is my mama and my papa. Down the road I look, and there comes Mary, hair of gold, lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. There's the old oak tree that I used to play on. Down the lane I walk with my sweet Mary, hair of gold and lips like cherries. It's good to touch the green, green grass of home. Cold clay walls that surround me, and then I realize that I was only dreaming. There's the guard and the sad old padre, arm in arm we walk at daybreak. Again I touch the green, green grass of home.
Also struggling for self-determination, and in that we're trying to make sure that the resources we have, the assets that we have in terms of oil, gas, coal, uranium, and timber, are developed in such a way that it addresses itself to future economic well-being of the entire Navajo Nation. And when you begin to do this, when you begin to talk about you want to control your own thing, you want to have complete jurisdiction, there are always those who, from the outside, think that you are asking too much, and they begin to harp on the fact that you're getting too big for your britches or you're getting too big for your own good. And that is why you begin to see, especially in the lower 48, when many of the Indians in the lower 48 states, when they began to assert their rights after many years of being subjugated to state or federal jurisdictions, now there is so-called this anti-Indian backlash. I don't know whether you've heard of it or not, or you have anything like that in this state or not, but down there it's very predominant. So I want to speak to that as to what we must do now in the short run to survive and to protect our way of life. Two, what we must do in the long run to survive and to protect our way of life and survive on this land, this continent, and this planet. In the short run, we must join forces. In order to be strong, we've got to be together. I don't mean just you and the corporations, but I'm talking about you and the rest of us down in the lower 48. We must join forces to fight the backlash against Native Americans, to buy more time, to figure out how to cope with the future. As I've said, different forces are now converging to make the Indian, the Native American, the Alaskan Native, to look like an enemy. The backlash arising from the East Coast land claims in Maine, Massachusetts, and elsewhere is now combining with a backlash in the West, stemming from competition for water, for energy resources, and for fish and game, to make the Indian look like a greedy bandit, demanding more of his fair share of land, of fish, of water, and of wildlife. As a matter of fact, we are pictured as the kind of bully picking on the poor, defenseless settler in New England, the nature-loving sportsman, the the conservationist, and the farmer who needs water for irrigation. In fact, all of the middle-class America is being taught to resent our ownership of energy resources and to blame us for the rising fuel bills more than the OPEC nations, more than the oil companies. It is as if our attempt to conserve those resources and utilize those assets to build a future for our children is a special act of treason to our fellow Americans. The assertions of our rights is now being characterized as a demand for sovereignty and for more than equality. And every American is being rallied against us under the banner of equal rights for all. In the lower 48, the word sovereignty is the big scare word. If you say that word around Representative Lloyd Meads or Senator Barry Goldwater, they have seizures. It reminds me of the time when the anti-poverty program first was established and Sergeant Shriver was made to be the director. And when Sergeant Shriver talked about participation of the poor, every governor, mayor, and school superintendent in the country had to be rushed to the hospital and put in the intensive care unit. In Alaska, I don't hear much talk about sovereignty, but the same issues clearly are present, because the real issue is survival, economic and cultural, and we have been set up partly by our own militant rhetoric and partly because it serves the selfish purpose of others to stick us with a bully label and then attack us. Again, let me stress, the issue is survival. We are not invading other people's land. We simply want to control what we have. We are not asking for more. We are simply trying to prevent more from being stolen and exploited. When something belongs to the Indian, any attempt to protect it is called a demand for sovereignty and is attacked. When something belongs to non-Indian, it is called private property and it is protected as sacred.
The chairman of the Navajo Tribal Council, Peter McDonald, on the struggles for sovereignty of the Indians in the Lower 48. Another Indian from the Lower 48 is Cody Bearpaw. He sings for us now.
The rain was turning into snow when I told her that I loved her. She turned my dream world into love. We lived on together. Seasons come and seasons go, but love goes on forever. And I found my winter love on a morning in December. You can be my winter love. Sow seeds of love in early spring, then wait all through the summer to see the harvest fall can bring. Then we'll both love him through the winter, help him through his spring of life, watch him grow into a man. Now the offspring of our love found his shelter through the summer. made his way of life. To make it through the winter. But your hair has turned to gray. In the autumn of your life, you've been everything to me. A love, a dream, a song, a wife. Then the cold snow of winter came, pushed your summers out of season, and took away my winter love, leaving me without a reason. Seasons come and seasons go, and love goes on forever. But I lost my winter love December. Yes, I lost my winter love on a morning in December.
The music of Cody Bearpaw. Next, we hear the publisher of the Tundra Times, Tom Richards Jr. Richards shares with us the psychological toll of publishing that statewide newspaper.
Those of us who get bogged down in getting this little paper out for you sometimes wonder how it can continue. We struggle constantly to try to make income, keep pace with expenses. Sometimes we feel like the Northwest Arctic caribou herd. The wolves always seem to be chasing us. Some weeks, it seems as though the Tundra Times is responsible for all the sins of the world, with public officials and our own native leaders alike denouncing our news coverage or our editorial policies. At other times, we don't hear a word, not even a whisper from our readers for weeks, and then we wonder if we aren't doing our job. And at the worst of times, we think the unthinkable, and secretly tell ourselves that it isn't worth it anymore. That nobody needs the Tundra Times, not even ourselves. In those darkest moments, we get a reminder of why there is the native newspaper. Perhaps it is a letter from John and Gayek from Tununuk, telling us that he liked the D2 special issue, or an offer from Carl Jack to help increase circulation in the Bethel area, so as people can be better informed. Or a quiet thank you from Native firefighters for a story we published on their problems in getting a job. And then we tell ourselves that it's all worthwhile. And then, before you tonight, I get the biggest reward of all, because I get the chance to say, Howard, old boss, your little newspaper is still around, thanks to your friends.
Tom Richard Jr. Next, Fiddling Around with Chet Atkins and Johnny Gimble.
Well, where have you been, Johnny?
Oh, I've been to town.
Well, what you been doing?
Oh, just fiddling around. Down.
Yeah, your wife makes the payments while you just fiddle around. Thank you. guitar till my folks are sick of it.
They won't never get well as long as you're picking it. Till my mouth looks funny. It ain't no fiddle, but it sure makes more money.
Chet Atkins and Johnny Gimble. Alaska Senator Mike Gravel also spoke at the Tundra Times banquet. Senator Gravel briefed the assembly on pending legislation, including a $40 billion energy bill before a Congress, and then he made a plea to the Calista Corporation.
If this bill does pass the Congress, and I feel confident some type of a compromise will, but one of the items that was readily agreed to was that if you can buy a new furnace that will save energy, oil-fired furnace or coal furnace or what have you, you'll be able to get a 20% credit. Similar with thermostats and all the new equipment that's available to lower the cost of heating. One of the things we're working on that's in deep conflict, and I don't know if we'll succeed, and that is, of course, to use the peat of Alaska, which we have extensive quantities of, use that for burning, and to be able to get a tax credit for the stoves or the furnaces that will be fabricated to handle the burning of peat. The problem we're having with it is that it will cost about $2 billion. At least that's what's projected. Hopefully we'll be able to overcome that, and I'm confident that we'll be able to see a compromise between the House, the Senate, and the administration, and President Carter will get an energy package through the Congress. Many other pieces of legislation passed. One particularly that's important to you was the appropriation for the Susitna project, which means that that project will now move forward towards its hopeful eventual goal of electrifying the interior of Alaska. Future issues that yet remain to be done, of course, his title is tribal definition legislation, and one that's very esoteric, but one that could almost involve the economic viability of several regions, and that's the IRS determination of capitalizing the cost of selecting land. Here, with the leadership of AFN, we are coming together in various meetings, and hopefully we'll be able to get that resolved without having to go to legislation. But if it does take legislation, we'll be prepared to initiate it and fight it through. D2 land, of course, remains paramount. It's more of an issue that affects all the states. But it certainly is going to be one issue that if we don't see the realization of land transfer, and I think we have a good chance of seeing that come about. Guy Martin, who can now play a very key role, is vectoring all of his priority interest on bringing that about. But if perchance this administration can't bring about the land transfer, I can assure you that that will be done by the Congress in law, and it will be up to the bureaucracy to just play catch-up with the land that's been deeded to you by the Congress itself. There's one other thing that I'd like to touch on, and that I think is the most important of all. That's the AFN organization. You've gone through quite a bevy of leaders. Don Wright, Roger, Keto, Emo, Willie, and now, of course, Byron. Young men who I think have made an outstanding contribution because they were able to be at the helm of an organization that was made up of all of the natives of Alaska. Now, this organization came into being back in 1964-65. In fact, your first banquet was in 1965 under Carl Down at the Woodshed. Since then, there has been what I would consider two very critical occurrences to your very existence. The first one was when, through a difference of opinion and personalities, the North Slope organization decided to leave the AFM. Realizing how serious this was, I used every effort I could to try and bring them back into the fold. And of course, this was the primary motivation of the leadership of the AFN itself. And now today, again, reasons appear obviously valid from a personal point of view. But we do have a slight division, and that is, of course, the absence of Chilista on the board and as a full member of the AFN. I've met on various occasions with the leadership of Chilista and with the leadership of the AFN, and I can assure you that I can think of nothing more serious to the viability of the Native community in the state of Alaska than to have one member of the family not sitting at the table supping with the rest of the family. And so I make a personal plea this evening to those who are here from the Chilista community that when they go back to their villages and sit in their councils in their region, that they will reevaluate their role and their participation. And I ask you not as a favor to me, not as a favor to the citizens of Alaska, but as a favor to yourself, to recognize that the most important political and social vehicle that the natives of Alaska have, the Federation of Alaska Natives. And the only way you're going to keep that vehicle is by sticking together. There's going to be problems in the future, there's going to be quarrels in the future. But I hope that one thing that will be sort of out of bounds as an action to take, and that will be permitting this organization to dissolve. Make no bones about it. You would not have realized your native claims in the Congress of the United States were it not for the creation of the AFN and the union and that force that lobbied it through. It would not have happened. You'd have not have had the self-determination that came about through this organization of being able to take over federal programs and contracting them and serving yourselves. And then the AFN and its own leadership recognizing that this had to be done by the villages, by the region. Let me just close by saying, I hope that the citizens of Chilista will reevaluate. And I hope that all of you will realize that the blessing you have is the fact that you can come together and in union have a great political force and a social force in the state of Alaska for your own improvement. Thank you very much.
Alaska Senator Mike Gravel. This is Jeff Kennedy. See you next week.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production.